Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and superstores. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow variants. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
Azaleas are half off.
It's a good deal. It's a hurricane sale. Mm-hmm. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
I need a hero. Which one of you is fresh from the fight?
You holding out? Are you?
It's not me.
You're holding out? All right. Might be a little while longer. Well, it is another installment of our Double Duty podcast, as we are simultaneously covering two shows about time travel, weirdly enough. We're going to do a recap of the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow, and then we'll talk a little bit about the most recent episode of Loki as well. So if you are looking for one or both of those things, you've come to the right place, my friends. Everything at Roxcart. We have it all. I am on duty, and we'll start out with Legends of Tomorrow Season 6, Episode 6, entitled Bishop's Gambit. So, we open basically back to where we were last week with Bishop and Sarah. We learn that Bishop is a clone, but not like the Avas. There's only one at a time. There's basically a thread where Sarah, realizing that she cannot beat Bishop, decides to sort of play him by claiming that she's come over to his side. She does meet up briefly with Gary and sends him off on a mission to reclaim a fuel cell so they can steal Kayla's ship and head out of there. Unfortunately, when Sarah learns that Nick has showed up on the planet, she sort of beats Bishop within an inch of his life, drags him into a room, and we find out in a kind of a shocking moment that she herself has been cloned, and she succumbed to the poison that she was hit with by the Amelia Earhart clone a couple episodes ago. And Bishop brought her back as a clone. Meanwhile, the rest of the Legends have infested Constantine's manor. They've got Gideon up and running in 1970s tech, and they've basically taken over everything. They use Gideon to find Amelia Earhart is in a sanitarium in the 50s where she claims to be Sarah. They track her down, drag her out of there, and have a discussion with her to try and figure out what happened to Sarah. But turns out that she claims to have killed her eventually. Among other things, she appears to be an alien fused together from Amelia Earhart and whatever were the potentially native aliens of the planet they were on. She also stole the Wave Rider from Mick when he arrived and parked it in the 1950s, so the team at least does reacquire that. John and Os Astra use a spell to interact psychically. John has Astra do it because he has not told any of the Legends about the fact that he can't do magic anymore after the events of the last week. And in our other time, in our other main plot thread, Mick and Kayla arrive on Bishop's planet and set about a plan to rescue Sarah. Mick is immediately captured. Kayla basically uses him as a distraction, but eventually he saves her as well from this Bishop deactivating the energy shield with less than noxious atmosphere. And they end the episode on Kayla's ship with a fuel cell, but trapped in one of the pods where they have sex.
Because it's that kind of show.
And then Spooner, who has been increasingly believing that there's something up with her because her powers seem to keep growing, can understand the alien Amelia Earhart and has it out with her and can speak her language. And she starts to worry that she is also an alien or some combination thereof. I think that's a 30,000 foot overview of this episode, in which a lot of stuff happens, I feel like.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It moved, well, Sarah moved along, kind of, at least. Yeah. Literally, I guess she shuffled off this mortal coil for, like, the fifth time. that does kind of make me sad, but we've got, man, I don't want to reuse a joke.
We'll see what happens. You never
Yeah,
know.
We've got a Sarah of Theseus at this point, which is a... I swear to God, right. I just made this joke yesterday in our text chat, and I don't like reusing jokes, but I thought it was a pretty good one.
Yeah,
I used it for Picard, actually, who has had the exact same thing happen to him.
So, yeah, it's rough. Yeah. It's rough being a fictional character. That moment genuinely took me by surprise. Like I had forgotten the whole poison thing and just assumed that she had been heel.
Yeah, so did I.
But I thought that was a nice twist.
Yeah.
That was well done. I like the guy who plays Bishop. He's kind of annoying and smarmy, but like in a fun, like villainous way. I enjoyed the bit where she's dragging him around and she's like, why aren't you in more pain? He's like, I turned off all my pain receptors.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fun.
And I will say I had the one moment here where I thought a character keeping a secret actually had some logic to it, where Constantine points out that he can't have anybody, basically, if anybody in hell or whatever finds out that he doesn't have any powers currently, he is in big trouble. So I was like, all right, that actually plays. You could probably trust some of your friends, but I can understand why John Constantine, of all people, would probably not.
Right. There's an arc, I think, it's got to be late 80s, early 90s, where that's the case, basically. He's way under power, but he doesn't. He just bluffs everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I forget. Like, man, I wish I could remember it. It's a Hellblazer thing, but there's one point where he just walks into basically the Mos Eisley of, like, dark, seedy magic users, and they all kind of just act like he's the biggest deal in the room, and they're kind of scared of him, and he's just total BSing them the whole time. So it's something they've explored with this character, and it's fun, whatever. It's like,
consistent.
Well, it's also the fact that he can just fix anything with magic somehow gets a little boring, right?
I know
we've moved that to Astra, but at least we can limit it a bit now and be like, well,
yeah.
You know, we can't just fix anything at any time.
Right.
There were some good Bayrod Spooner interactions at a couple points, because they make sort of an odd couple of, like, Bayrod super chill, Spooner super aggro.
Yeah. He's turned out, I was noticing that he's turned out really well, which I think we had talked about previously, since he's someone who was sort of injected into the series without much
backstory,
you know, warning.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he just suddenly gets plopped into the series and it has supposed to have been there the whole time, but I think they've done a decent job with the character, and I also think the actor's quite good at pulling off those moments where he's sitting down having those conversations with people.
Although they have leaned extremely hard into, like, the stoner thing this year, like,
well,
that's basically
true.
It
that's true, yeah.
But I do enjoy
but,
him.
But, you know, I think he's able to be the, you know, Counselor Troy Guinan.
Yeah.
Star Trek. of the group.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We were primed to dislike him. And now I like him. He's like he's kind of like a wise stoner, which is, you know, a little bit of a trope, but he manages to pull it off without going full Spicoli.
He's very charming too, the actor. He's very he's got a lot of charisma, and that works really well for him. And, you know, I've enjoyed, like, I don't know, in a bad episode a couple weeks ago, he was the bright spot, right? Where he was the Jay Guevara.
Oh, and, yeah.
Yes.
That was the best part of that episode by far.
Yeah. Did something change in the, are they, like, what's with all the open pot references now?
I don't know. They're just very
legalization.
Just legally, like, is it? Yeah. I guess because it feels like, okay, now you're going way hard on this.
Right? They didn't. Yeah. It wasn't like they're intimating it, right? Like, they're just flat out being like, he's like rolling a joint in one scene.
Yeah,
he's like,
yeah.
I assume it's just the prevailing attitude.
That's cool. Yeah, right. I was just curious if, it's not legal federally yet, right?
Right.
But like California, and
right?
Okay,
yeah.
Anyway, whatever. That's very tangential.
I enjoyed the scene with Gary and all the clones. I thought that was kind of funny, especially the bit where he has to keep apologizing for eating a whole bunch of them, even though they were delicious.
Yeah.
Right.
And I Jess McCallan playing all three of those Ava clones, I think she did a nice job with all the... It's just it's a fun little, like, a bit for her to do, and gives her a little more... opportunity to explore different characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, it gets to play dress up. Although, she's got to be putting in some long days.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
She's got a lot of shame. Yeah, a lot
she's got to get shot three times for, like, any one scene in that one, you know?
That's
a fair amount of work.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't blame them at all for having, like, the Stormtrooper version of them wear the helmets all the time. Because, you know. Yeah.
Way easier. Yeah. And then the other little bit that I really enjoyed was that they have a key fob for the Wave Rider.
Mm-hmm.
That literally
that?
Oh yeah, when they walk into it in the field, Nate pulls out a key fob and it literally goes boop beep when it decloaks, which seems right. I enjoy that. It made me laugh.
Yeah.
So overall, I thought a fun episode, keeps the plot moving. There was a lot going on with a bunch of different characters, some of whom we hadn't got a lot of time with yet this season, so that was kind of fun. Stuff's coming together, I guess.
Yeah, good, fine, so, serviceable app. Right. Dead Sarah looked pretty creepy, I gotta say.
That was creepy. I know that must have been tough for you.
You know what? She's died so many times that it's...
Does it really matter anymore?
I mean, it's like Jean Grey shows up. I mean, you know she's going to end up dead, right? Like,
kind of what you do. I didn't write down too many lines from this episode, but the two that stood out for me... Oh, first of all, one... Gideon on the 1970s TV doing the Max Headroom thing, basically, including there's the modem sound at one point.
Yeah. Which,
that was great. Awesome. That was very funny. Bayrod complaining, we never meet the chill aliens. I also enjoyed. And the delivery from Dominic Purcell when he hands over the oxygen mask and Kayla asks him why, and he just goes, it's heavy.
Yeah. I like that. Well, first of all, I don't believe him. Like, he's going to save my life, of course. But yeah, it's so perfect line for his character. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. I really enjoy it. I didn't like him in the beginning of the season, but he's getting back to his old lovable, gruff self. And do we know if he's coming back? I think he said he wasn't. I'm not sure if we've discussed
publicly.
That or not.
He's publicly said I think he is done at the end of the season. Although obviously, always
this seems like a nice way for him to get.
He might pop up again.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this seems like a nice way. Like he. Hooks up with this alien, whatever gender a tentacle is, and like goes about the galaxy with her. That seems
right, and
fine and fair.
Yeah, and there's some redemption there, right, for him, because I really liked his speech about where he talks about how bad humans are, and then talks about Sarah being different. And
I really like that. That was touching.
Yeah, I agree. I like that. So I thought that was nice, and it gave him a moment of character development and also helps put in relief some of his behavior in the earlier season. Like that's the beginning of the arc, and this is the continuation of that.
Yeah. Sarah looked very fetching in her dress without being salacious in any way. I don't know. I just, I kind of like that scene. It was obviously played up to be that she's tricking him, but she still did it in a nice way. I thought it worked because he's so vain.
Oh right, that, yeah, and like, kind of dumb for a genius.
Right. Well, I mean, is he? He's like
supposedly
Theseus of genius. I mean, what is he anymore? He's
nope.
I don't know. I'm just going to
keep working. That doesn't mean anything.
Well, guess what? If I keep replacing all the parts of that joke, it's going to come around again.
You're going to do the Anakin and Padme thing?
I'm going to do the Anakin Padme thing, yeah.
Going to keep using that joke. You're going to keep using that joke. Yeah. All right, let's get a rating on the books, and then we'll move on to our appies to our entree.
Nicely done.
Thank you. John?
It's a biff. I mean, it's not a super strong biff, but it was a solid episode, as opposed to some of the ones that were a little bit earlier in the season. I think for me that the twist at the end, which you said and I agreed with, I didn't see coming particularly for some reason. I think maybe I'm not thinking about this show as much. I mean, in general, I don't think about this show a lot. Like I don't sit around and ponder the plot points. Whereas with the Marvel stuff, I'm like, ooh, what about this?
Let's dissect everything,
and, like, slowing things down and looking at stuff. And then this show, I'm just like, I watch and I enjoy. So, it's a nice one, and if they can keep up this level for the last two, I would be very happy. Because I think we were slightly disappointed by some of the episodes earlier on.
Yeah, right. Guy,
it's a fried calamari of a biff, of an appetizer. Mm. It's it's fine. It's got tentacles in it. It's fried, so that's always
definitely
nice.
Has that.
It's not like it's not a highly refined plate, I guess is what I'm saying. But it's nice. And
it'll fill you up.
Everybody can enjoy it. It'll fill you up. It's good, greasy, it's healthy because it's fish. I particularly like So the reveal is cool. I like Bishop. That story is getting a little bit more interesting now that we have other characters interacting with it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm kind of interested to see where the series goes. Although, you know, like John, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about this one.
Yeah. No. I'll round up the bits on that. I want to give him credit for that. That I think, you know, even if you don't spend as much time thinking about it, I think it was well structured the way that reveal came about, because they laid just enough breadcrumbs that if you go back and look, you can be like, yeah, that makes sense. But also at the same time, they structured it in a way that you would not be thinking about that at all. And that makes for a good twist. So well done on that.
They didn't hint at it at all, particularly.
No, I mean, not really. But everything makes, like, retroactively, everything makes sense.
You probably could have noticed that she wasn't wearing the ring, I guess.
Right, right. But it was retroactively, there was a logic to it that all checks out. And I think that's cool. That's well structured. And I agree. I mean, it's not... I think in some ways it suffers by comparison of, you know, the fact that we are doing double duty and comparing with the Loki stuff. It's a different caliber of show, but it's still good in its own right. I have no complaints about that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, it is what it is. It's not, they don't have as big a budget and they, you know, it's a CW show. It's not.
Yeah. Right. Right.
I mean, one of the reasons like these Marvel shows are so good is because they have to be, because they're trying to launch a new platform.
Well, and they have to live up to the quality of the movies, right? Like that's a challenge.
I mean,
they could have done,
they're probably a little bit cheaper than the movies, but they could have gone way cheaper than the movies if they had decided to. But
they didn't want it to feel like an inferior product to the movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
But right. I don't want to go too far down this tangent, but I sent you guys an interview yesterday with five cast members. So Bucky, Sebastian Stan, Anthony Mackie, Liz Olsen, Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Bettany, and Tom Hiddleston. Phew, man, I never remember names. Got a clean sweep there. Mackie was saying that when he'd been told of the project, he was scared. He was like, "Oh no, I don't want to do this because you're going to put us on TV and it's going to be like." I mean, he brings up Batman 66. He really thought it'd be like a low budget thing, and like you're gonna hang his characters out to dry, and not the case. They seriously seem to make what we're about to talk.
They seem to take care of both the characters and the actors.
Yes,
because they also talked to me. And they're like, Elizabeth Olsen was the one who's like, "I'm gonna answer this honestly. When you do these things, these high budget things, it." Gives you the ability to do a whole bunch of other things that you can do an independent film because the people who are producing it know that you're going to drive more money to them.
I really, really love that response. It was maybe we'll put it in this show notes. It was a Variety interview with the five of them. I'm sure just given that amount of information, you'll be able to find
it's pretty funny.
It was good.
It's funny. It was good.
They
really go on
relentless.
Yeah.
Yeah. They really go after him, especially on that Loki seminar thing, which was pretty funny.
I know. And I think Elizabeth Olsen was finally like, okay, that's enough.
somebody had to bring him down.
Yeah. She's the adult in the room.
But that was good. Yeah. I agree. It was well put together. All right. Since we're talking about anyways, let's jump over to Loki and dive into that. This is season one, episode two, entitled The Variant. John, take it away.
Okay. Oshkosh, 1985, Renaissance Fair. A team of Minutemen shows up and the commander gets mind controlled by the Variant as they go to survey the scene. She and the Variant then kill the rest of the team before the Variant takes the time charge and the commander through a portal. Meanwhile, back at the TVA, Miss Minutes is giving Loki employee orientation for a SWAT setter with Mobius's jet ski magazine. Mobius gives Loki a jacket that you can actually buy from Marvel now. This is a strange coincidence.
Of course.
Mobius and B-15 explain the situation to a team of agents, and Loki explains the finer points of his abilities to them. Mobius dangles an audience with the timekeepers to keep Loki in line, and they head off to the Renaissance Fair. After looking at the scene, Loki says he believes leaving the tent is a trap, and he suggests that he's the key and wants to bargain for assurances, but Mobius realizes that he's lying, and they reset the timeline and leave. Mobius has a meeting with the judge, whose name is Ravana Renslayer, who is kind of down on using Loki. Mobius reveals that he's never met the timekeepers, which I thought was an interesting tidbit. And she says that they're all over this situation. Loki is alternately obsequious with him and arrogant. And Mobius parks him in the library to do some research, where he reads about the destruction of Asgard and genuinely seems to tear up for a minute before he notices something. The note about zero time variance energy at Ragnarok gets him thinking that the variant is hiding in apocalypses, where time variation doesn't matter because everything is going to get destroyed anyway. So he finds Mobius and destroys his lunch to make the point. They head to Mount Vesuvius in 79 AD to prove the point. Loki makes a big scene, but there's no branch created because everyone is about to die anyway.
I would have paid good money to see which doctor was it. Just run by in the background. And
Right.
Although apparently my wife was the one to point out that there were some survivors at Pompeii, so that is slightly overplayed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it doesn't really... It illustrates the point.
We'll talk about this. We'll get to the apocalypse thing.
Well, because if he wakes everybody up and there's no longer any sleeping ash people, that's different.
Yeah,
right?
We'll talk about this. I think there's some questions about it.
I'm fine with it. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are a lot of apocalyptic events. Mobius explains his love of jet skis and that the timekeepers are still untangling the future. His memory is jogged about the Kablooey gum and the research apocalyptic events that coincide with Kablooey. Loki finds a hurricane in Alabama in 2050. Mobius gets approval to take a team and is feeling so good he gives Loki some knives, which B-15 immediately takes away. Just a scene from the trailer, but I think it's so great. Yeah,
I love it. It comes up later on when he has to fight, and he doesn't have his actual things that he's any good at, right? So it's good that they explain that away.
Just he has to use a series of
as a gag.
They're going to a Roxcart store where people are hiding out from the hurricane that is going to kill them anyway. B-15 insists on accompanying Loki herself. The variant is there and watching them and sets a 20-minute countdown on something. Loki and B-15 approach someone who says he's shopping for plants. The person grabs B-15 and possesses her and then collapses, and then the variant and Loki smack talk each other for a bit. The variant switches bodies again as they continue to sort of stalk each other. Loki says he's going to overthrow the timekeepers and he wants the variant to work for him, and the variant is not interested in ruling the TVA. The other team finds the kidnapped Minuteman, who says that she gave away where the timekeepers are and how to find them. The variant has time charges set up all over the store, and Loki thinks that it's to blow the place up. The variant then possesses this big guy, and we get the fight as Loki tries to get the variant to come out. Finally, the variant appears and unmasks herself. The timer, it's, you know, presumably... female Loki, who's just Loki. The timer is up and the time charges are activated and sent through the timeline, creating multiple branches. All the agents suit up and head through throughout the timeline to presumably try and fix it. The variant opens a time portal and leaves. Mobius and the Minutemen chase after Loki, but he goes through the portal and it closes.
There's a lot here. Actually, my first thought at the very end, by the way, was watching all the hunters leave, was that they're going to go to the TVA, but I don't know. I mean, it seems like it cleans out, like everybody leaves the TVA to go fix the timeline.
The two of them are going to go to the TVA.
I don't know. Well, that's a possibility, but she's claimed that she doesn't have any interest in them, so.
Right. I did think the bombs were going to bomb the TVA headquarters, but the way the timeline is shattering, it seems to me that, like, she's sent one of these devices to random spots on the timeline, on the main timeline, and she's nuking that.
Yeah.
So that's
right. Yeah. Right.
So, all right. Two things that I think are important to the series. I mean, I'm not sure about the timeline branching thing. I mean, or the, we were talking about the apocalypses, right? Like, cause like Loki makes the point at one point, like, oh, you could go back and push the Hulk off the Rainbow Bridge and everything would be fine. I was like, yeah, but if you killed the Hulk,
you can't really do that.
That wouldn't work, right? Like, there have to be some limits, as we were briefly alluding. Otherwise, you could still cause a big disturbance.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, they are careful to couch this.
There's, there are certain things that you can do, but there are certain things you can't do either.
They are careful to couch this in several places by talking about these things being like oversimplifications, which I think is good. I think that's a good way of presenting it. Like, there are more nuances to what we understand. But the other thing that I think is really important here and kind of gets glossed over a little bit is there's a bit at the beginning when Mobius is giving his briefing about all the variants of Loki that they've encountered and pruned over the years. And I have questions about this because several of these variants do not look anything like our Loki, right? So it reaffirms, I think, the supposition that I've seen made in a few places that the sacred timeline does contain multiple realities. Which the variant itself would seem to back up, because as far as we know, there's not a point in our main continuity where there is a female Loki. Assuming that is in fact who she is.
Yeah, unless he does some Doctor Who level stuff, which I don't know. I mean, Loki lists his powers as being able to change his look, right? Or being a shapeshifter.
That's true.
It's possible he just did that. What it actually... Well, I'll wait for Conspiracy Corner.
Isn't the whole show Conspiracy Corner now? I think that's all we do.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess so. Well. So it made me think that the kid that gave Owen Wilson, Mobius, the Kablooey, was in fact Loki.
Hmm. It's possible.
Hmm. I think they would have gotten variance energy off that kid, though.
Oh, yeah. Did they? Yeah.
They would have noticed. I think they would have noticed that.
Got it. Yes, you're right. So. Okay, that's good. Because, well, the fact that he was giving Kablooey, it seems like a hint about, which seems like evil mastermind thing to do. Like, I'm going to hand you the thing that says...
The variant did that on purpose.
Yes, I would agree.
Okay. Okay, so the kid just is literally the messenger.
Deliberate clues in order to draw them out.
Right, for whatever their plan is, which we still don't know, other than chaos.
Yeah, well, it just seems like she wants to take down the TVA. Just, like, not rule it, just destroy it.
Which is possible.
Which kind of gets to what we were talking about last week about where we think his character is going to go.
Right. Or even if it's not so much the TVA itself as it is the sacred timeline in the sense of predestination,
right?
Overly
stringent control on free will, if you will.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I will.
Yeah. I'm interested to see the Minuteman who gets captured keeps saying it's real.
Yeah, right.
Over and over again, and I don't
no
have
idea
an
what
idea.
That's about.
No idea what that means. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, and I didn't quite understand this. C-20, the captured agent.
Yep.
Minuteman. Right. I guess. Have they called themselves Minutemen yet?
Yes.
They do. I know the comics do it, and I've just been okay.
Yeah.
C-20. She says that she gave up how to find the timekeepers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how? Because Mobius hasn't even seen them.
Well, he still might know where they are, even if he hasn't met them.
That would be weird, though, wouldn't it?
I don't know. It seems a little weird, but I'm not.
You know,
and we don't know
what's on. I've never.
Like not there. We're not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, I guess also I've never seen the Prime Minister, and he lives right down the street from me. So I guess,
true, right?
I mean, I'm not in like neighbors, but you know,
that's
like,
if
I
anybody
walk to his house,
right? So, if anybody walked in and was like, could not figure that out without having to kidnap you and get them to tell, it's right there. It's literally right there.
Yeah. Anyway, it struck me as a little weird. I think. I don't know if you want to get into the metaphysical conversation that they have and the articles of faith that Mobius has.
I think
a little.
And I think there's also an interesting, as long as we're talking about Mobius, I think there's also a big, I don't want to, is the word ontological appropriate here? There's a big existential question about Mobius and about the rest of the people at the TVA. And I saw some interesting hypotheses about this, like that, you know, Mobius might be a clone or a person, like a variant who was brainwashed or something. So
well, so I guess there's I mean, I think that in the comic book, aren't they all clones?
I think there are several movies. I don't know it well enough, but I've heard that in the comic.
I never read the TVA in the comic books, so I don't know. But I've heard that. And then the other speculation is that these are people who were plucked from the timeline.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Because they only remember being there. And Casey last week said the same thing, right? Well, he doesn't know where a fish is.
He's been at a desk. Yeah. He's been at a desk forever.
Yeah. So I think there's a question there of like, are the timekeepers basically pulling in people to run the TVA from them? And if so, what does that say about them?
Yeah.
Well, right. Honestly, Owen Wilson, being a 90s stoner jet ski guy, or like beer swigging jet ski.
There's something there.
Yeah. I could see him. I mean, he's from Texas. He could definitely jet ski the hell out of Galveston party zone. You know, like I could see that. I could definitely see them. Not, I don't know why you would pluck him out, but.
Well, he just, he was a variant, right? Maybe he just did something.
I'm assuming, yeah.
And
right,
they took
yeah,
him.
And we're they like, reprogrammed him.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's what Reset is.
Could be.
Yeah, that's true. We don't know that yet.
We don't
sure
see what happens. Yeah, I mean, they all seem to get disintegrated, but maybe they. It's right also possible they could just remove people and sort of.
It would be funny if that other guy, guy who got disintegrated, shows
yes,
up.
Yes, yeah,
just working away at a desk.
So there's two things. There's when Mobius is leaving the office of the judge, which we should talk about too. He says, "If it doesn't work out, I'll delete him myself."
Mm. Yeah,
and then they've got another verb, reset, which mm-hmm are distinct.
They also use prune.
Well, they use prune for a timeline.
No, they refer to pruning Loki at one point, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true.
Okay, maybe they're just using verbs willy-nilly.
I would yeah think that prune and delete are the same thing, but...
The scene in the judge's office is interesting, right? Because I thought somebody... And this may have been our friend Kelly Gamont in the Incomparable Slack was talking about some of these theories, too. And, like, the whole question of when they spend so much time on him commenting about the stuff that's not from his cases that's on mm-hmm on the judge's shelves.
Yeah, there's like a jealousy there.
Right, and also yes wondering if it's another Mobius, right? Like if there is right multiple Mobiuses right who are working for her, essentially, oh, each doing their own thing.
Those rings are all from you.
It could be different, yeah, yes. Right, right. I thought that on the second watch, I thought that again. Was like, oh, those could be just different Mobius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I like that a lot.
I think that's where the setup, the pen is a setup then, in my opinion, right? So at the end, he says there's a moment where we have a shot of the pen, Franklin D. Roosevelt High School, and he says that's not, didn't he say it's not from one of his cases?
Yeah, it's not one.
I think so.
Yeah.
It's also in some way he, yeah.
Right.
He said, I don't recognize this or something like that.
So I'm going to bet, I would put money down that comes back before the end, that we see something about Mobius's existence or the other analysts that explain what the deal with that was.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if the pen necessarily comes back, but the
incident,
concept.
Whatever the incident is that happened. Yeah.
Right, right.
Well, Franklin D. Roosevelt High School was a major event in the integration of the South and school boards, right? In the 60s.
I don't think so, was it? The only one, there's one in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting the name wrong. Was it Roosevelt High School? Okay, anyway. Well, maybe I'm totally grasping at straws there.
Yeah, I don't think that's a thing.
I think the name of the high school had some sort of historical significance, and I'm blanking on it right now.
I was trying to get us to talk about
yeah, like,
I knew
Reese theory.
Yeah.
Don't you know? Don't you know the history of the?
it's the Biff cast wherein like I rope and dope you into talking about critical race theory. That's how insidious the Biff cast is.
Yeah. Oh God! This is for our listeners in Texas and other places.
Yeah, enjoy.
We gotta educate them somehow.
I enjoyed the Rocks Cart, which seems to be a Rocks on Walmart.
Merging. Definitely a Roxxon subsidiary, right?
Yeah.
Well, and Walmart.
I love the logo. Like, there's two X's with like little happy heads on them.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Like, they do fun stuff with that Roxxon logo. It's been in like Iron Man 3, a couple of other places.
It was in Agent Carter. Roxxon shows
it was
up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to stick to the actual ones that they. You know,
oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, and also heavily
Shield, but
I know heavily featured in what's the one? Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, they were the big baddies. Yeah.
Yep. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just a fun little Easter egg.
Yeah.
For now. And,
yep.
You know,
sure. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that one is, you know, that's, I don't think Roxxon is going to be like a big bad here.
No. It's
like
just,
they're just, it's just like, yeah.
It's just, it's what is
miserable,
it? 20...
miserable place.
Yes.
Right. 2050, you could see this giant.
What a lousy place to die.
Yeah.
I think is the,
You know what's funny? It's like if they ever really properly introduce Roxxon, it'll be interesting to see if they introduce them as a giant energy conglomerate, which is what they are in the comics, or like as like an Amazon.
Big tech company.
Giant Amazon style thing. Yeah.
Right.
There's a
lot. Speaking of design, we were touched on design a little bit. I wanted to call out the fact that the devices that she uses to trigger time, what are those bombs? Time bombs?
Reset charges?
Reset devices. The holy hand grenades. is a digital clock that flips over.
Yeah, I like that.
Wow, that's really weird. That's a great. I mean, they went to that level of detail to like make it look like a digital clock, except for some reason it flips over instead of just like the position of the,
it's not a
diode changing.
It's not one of the devices that they use, the tempads.
She has
one at one point, right? Because she uses it. We see it early.
I think it is that, but I mean, in that mode, clock mode.
The design is great, right? We see her very early on in the Renaissance Fair scene. She uses it to open a door, and we see like the UI a little bit. And I love it. It's slightly clunky.
There's a little miss minutes you can tap on.
Yep.
It's legit good. Like if you gave me that, I would know how to use it for sure.
Right. But I love that everything's a little dated, right? Like the computer that she jumps in the beginning, the fact at the end that when everything goes bad, they're calling them up on a rotary phone, which made me laugh.
What a waste of time that is.
So this kind of, there's kind of two bugs to me in this, issues, I guess, in this episode. One, why does she set a timer? Why don't just do it? I don't understand.
I think she has a plan.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
She's a Cylon.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I, although they've only got six episodes. I trust that she has a plan. She'd foreseen that the other Loki was going
to
come with her.
I think she was trying to time everything because there were so many different reset charges.
Because
she's still wiring them.
She was still wiring them. After.
Right. Yeah. I think she was just wiring up the last of them.
Yeah. Well, still, I would still have one.
She said it when she saw them arrive, and then she continued to wire things. So she needed more time.
Good enough for me. Sold. Yeah. Step two. These Minutemen really need Star Trek
jobs.
They are bad. The A need ranged weapons. B, Star Trek comm badges would have saved you a whole lot of trouble this episode. Mm-hmm.
They do have comms of some kind because she tries to. B-15 gets called later when she's already been knocked out. But
when they find C-20 tied up, the guy runs away from her to go get help.
Yeah.
Like he discovers her in the office and then leaves her.
That's true.
And it's like, that's a weird
that
flow.
That doesn't make any sense, does it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think you're right. Charitably, you could say they're used to dealing with variants who are much less threatening, but they also claim to have dealt with a lot of Lokis. So they should be better prepared.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a little possibility out there. I think potentially that Loki took something from B-15. He's checking over her body when she collapses after being possessed. So I'm not entirely convinced he didn't take something off of her for his sort of long, whatever his long play is.
Yeah, could be. I mean, because we see him kneel down and we presume he's...
His hands are out of view.
Although Lady Loki here, I'm just going to call her that for now. Just to disambiguate.
That is a legit character from.
It's why it happened.
Although she does not like being called Loki, which I thought was interesting.
I know we'll get to that part of Conspiracy Corner. We've got a conspiracy castle at this point. but she does. She reacts as if he was checking on his fallen squadmate.
Mm-hmm.
And I could believe it both ways, that he would take something off of her, like a comm or like some sort of communication device, or that he would legitimately check on her. Because, you know, when he's sad about Ragnarok, I 100% believe that guy is sad about Ragnarok. There's nobody around, so you need to read his emotions as if they were sincere. And he looks pretty beaten up about it. And in fact, it's so in character for him when Mobius says, to death of everybody, so sorry. And he's like,
yes, very sad. Yeah. Anyway,
yes, very sad. Yeah, but I could see that in character, just brushing it off. Like, I already
grieved about this. Yeah,
I think he's still grieving about it, and it's annoying him. But he just won't. He won't let anybody have that.
See him. He won't let anybody see him doing it. You know?
Yeah.
I think he genuinely likes Mobius, and I think I sent you guys an interview with Hiddleston and Owen Wilson talking about that last scene, right? Which is why does he go through the portal, and like, you know, does he feel bad basically about betraying Mobius's trust, at least in the short term? And I think there is an angle to him. I mean, I'm not convinced that he's entirely betrayed him, but I think clearly he does realize that by taking that action, he is effectively betraying him in the short term. But I think he feels bad about it. I think he does like him, and if not quite seeks his approval, like, there's a certain amount of respect there.
Do we think he really does want to just hustle the timekeepers and take control?
I think he's always playing an angle.
It's possible, but
not out of maliciousness, really. It's just like Loki gonna Loki, right? Like,
what I get. It's like, one thing I do like about it, well, there's a lot of things I like about the show, but one thing I sort of admire it for is that since he was just plucked out of nowhere and introduced into a whole brave new world, he cannot have a master plan. And so far, at least, we've been with him basically every moment, right? Like, every pertinent moment, for sure. So he hasn't had time to behind the scenes like scheme up some crazy thing that we are not
his feet. Yeah,
that's it. Like, he's he's tap dancing a lot. Yeah, like when he was doing the CSI thing in the beginning,
you can see the gears going, right?
First time I watched it, I'm like, okay, I get it, and it starts getting a little bit more and more, and I'm like,
tortured,
right. And then when he gets to the point where it's like, and then we'll meet the timekeepers because they're in grave danger, I'm like,
it turns out towards the end. I mean,
but not
she's bringing it. She's bringing it.
That was a stop clock situation.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, he didn't derive that from like finding dead people on the ground. But his initial thing, if it was like, don't go outside that tent or you'll die, I'm like, that's plausible.
Yeah.
Definitely plausible. You know, I love sniper situation kind of thing.
I love Owen Wilson's, like, he takes like an extra beat before he's like, he's lying. You know, like that was really great. And then I love the scene later where they're going back and forth and Loki's trying to do like, that was your first lesson in tracking down a Loki. Expect the expected, you know, like as he's trying to like really, really work at getting himself out.
It's so pathetic.
Yes,
it's so pathetic.
It's kind of pathetic.
And I love the way that as he walks out of the office, what's that, man? Renslayer.
The fifth Hogwarts house.
Exactly. Thank you. He just blows right past him and then whistles. So puts him in this place, like, okay, kid, just come on. And he's like stuck to his heels, yapping away, trying to seem like he's, you know, legit. And I was teaching you a lesson by lying to you. Like, oh, it's perfect.
We cannot forget to mention, of course, that he declares to Mobius that he is 10 steps ahead of him.
Yes, of course.
I know. If I hadn't started with the I need a hero thing, that was going to be my... Honestly, if we had... Was 10 steps ahead on the list of names when we christened the show?
No, it probably should have been.
Probably should have been, 10 steps ahead is a great name. Nobody take it, but 10 steps ahead is a great name for a superhero show.
The evolution of their dynamic throughout this episode is wonderful, right? Because it starts with that, and then Mobius tries to manipulate him a little bit. And then, you know, sends him down to do work. And then Loki comes up with a theory, right? And he gets him. And that scene where they're in Pompeii and they're like, they're just going back and forth, like, oh, this is so cool, right? Like, we don't want to be giddy. Yeah. It's in bad taste, right? Like, it's just the dynamic between Hiddleston and Owen Wilson there is fabulous. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
I love him calling him out too. Like, you're just going to lure me to the field and kill me.
I would never stab someone in the back.
You literally
stab people in the back like 50 that
had
times.
It had a real Joker vibe. Like when he's saying that it got old.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's like, I keep trying to do fresh, crazy stuff. Like, I don't know. That seems like a boring way to kill somebody. Yeah.
I don't know if they
looked up Ravana Renslayer, and she's like an old character. She's created in 1965.
Oh, wow.
She's like Stan Kang's,
and Don Heck.
Kang's gal pal at times.
Something like, yeah, right. Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we do know Kang is potentially in play in the next series of the MCU, and there have been rumors that he would show up in Loki, but I don't think anything concrete yet, but not out of the question. Yeah.
Well, he's a time-traveling conqueror.
Yeah,
plausible.
Wherever he wants to.
A couple other...
I mean, it's possible he is the timekeeper. You know?
Yeah, because they keep focusing on the one in the middle, which maybe mm-hmm. that sounds dumb, because it is the one in the middle. So any shot you light up...
It does look a little bit like Kang.
He does, yeah. Just that helmet sort of style thing, yeah.
I don't know how much they let Hiddleston improv in the Pompeii scene, but all of that is wonderful. Letting out the goats.
That was
great.
A real Doctor Who moment, too, which is why I wanted. Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be way too so much, but
nothing has any consequence.
Yeah,
the scene of the cloud of ash approaching is in the trailer, and I looked at that several times trying to figure out, well, where's that supposed to be? What's supposed to be happening? Trying to figure out what the dynamic was going on there, and it delivered so great. I mean, so like actually seeing the scene in the show was so much probably better than I would have imagined.
Yeah, it was better for me because I saw that in the in the trailer, and I was like, okay, well that looks cool, but I don't know. Like it didn't excite me in a way that like, well that's cool, and he's a chaotic and he's hanging out in Pompeii. Like, well, I kind of
just so pleased with himself.
Yes.
I know, but I want it to mean something more than like, look at all these people die. And it did. It really worked out because he was he had a theory and this was proving his theory to his buddy. And like the joy was not in the death of the people. The joy was in like, look how right I am. Which I really enjoyed. And he does, in fact, in this episode, say that his driving motivation is that he loves being right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And man, Loki, amen to you, brother.
the line that stood out to me the most from this episode is his bit where he talks about no one bad is ever truly bad and no one good mm-hmm. is ever truly good, which I think is, if anything, as close to a summation as you're going to get about Loki. And there's that calls back to a conversation that Mobius and Renslayer have earlier, where Mobius asks if Loki can change, and Ravonna says only if the timekeepers decree it. Otherwise, he's going to like play the part that he was set up to play of being like a villain. So I think it's interesting because it keeps his character kind of in flux, like, and that's what keeps us on his side to a certain degree, right? Like, even if he is nominally a villain, the fact that we know that there is the potential for him to be redeemed.
Yeah, I read that almost more as a threat, whereas like a Loki, it seems, can change by himself, right? Like, he can encounter
within parameters. Like Ragnarok.
Yeah.
The whole Loki in Ragnarok is a different Loki than in Avengers, of course.
Totally. But so when she was saying that he will change only if they allow him to change, I guess the distinction there is like, are they writing his path or are they allowing him to make certain decisions? And if he doesn't make the right decisions, they will retract them.
That's the question. I think that's the $64,000 question. I mean, like, they talk about the thing. We're the ones, we're here and we're the only ones who have free will potentially, right? Like inside the TVA because we're kind of outside of time. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting, sort of nut to crack here.
Yeah. Oh, back to Pompeii. I love the bit where he's like, "We're from the future," and then he's like, "Wait,
are we from the future?"
I don't even know.
Right.
It sounds future.
It seems sort of
future-y. It seems future-y. It's perfect. I love it. Also, even though it's all like retro-looking tech, he's like, "Yeah, it's
speaking Latin."
Like the future.
The speaking Latin too is pretty great. Yeah, I love his delivery and all that.
That's
whoa,
yeah,
omnes. Yeah.
Well, I love that. Like Thor speaks Groot. Asgardians just do that. It's fine.
You know, they're supposed to be gods, sort of.
Yeah,
sure. So they should have some extra abilities.
That was a good moment in him when he explains how the powers work, right? And he talks about it in very technological terms, mm-hmm. like, oh, it makes a holographic duplicate or whatever. And you're like, okay, I guess.
and it makes sense. And you're like, I get it. But, you know, it's not that big a deal.
I love when he calls him Professor Loki.
I want that to be a different variant. Like, this is Professor Loki. This is
it's just
Dr. Loki. Right.
Just
is
such a perfect Owen Wilson delivery.
Question.
I'll go with Professor Loki over here. And
were there really only 10,000 people or so on Asgard? That
did not make sense to me. Also,
you never see that many. I mean,
it's possible.
So,
and we know
seems like
again
in your favorite movie, The Dark World, we see quite a lot.
Not all of them died.
Right. Some of them made on the ship, but I think only a few hundred, if that, right? Like, it's not a huge number that escape.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I mean, it seems, although, wait, didn't she go into Murrisby prior to Ragnarok?
She did. She killed, like, the army, and
right.
then the regular people escaped to the mountains.
Yeah.
And I guess some
did.
Die.
I mean, unfortunately, it seems crazy to say 9,000 isn't enough, but.
No, but I mean, it's a small.
I think we're desensitized.
It's small for a planet, right?
Especially because the next case that they do, the one in Rocksmart. Well, I guess what is it? A massive hurricane has taken out
Category 8.
The entire,
they say, which is not a thing that exists currently, kind of, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. So that had 10,000 victims.
Right. Exactly. As many as all of Asgard. I don't know, because some make it out on that ship. Some die at Thanos's hand. Later,
right,
and then
right.
some make it to the where Valkyrie and Thor are in Endgame, right, where they're on the in Norway. So I don't know, it still seemed low, but maybe there are just fewer of them. I don't know.
Maybe there's a bunch of people there that weren't Asgardians and they just weren't counting them, which is typical for gods and mere mortals.
Do we have
just,
other
just visitors?
the tourists. They don't count. We got other theories, other things to discuss.
I'm constantly thinking about it though.
Do we think Lady Loki is actually Lady Loki? Because there is another character associated with Thor that uses green magic and is tricky.
I assume we are discussing the Enchantress.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't know if he wanted to.
That's fine. I think as a theory, it's perfectly happy to be out there. Do we not? Does she? I'm trying to remember. Did she appear in Did she appear in S.H.I.E.L.D. or was that a different?
No, that's Lorelei.
Lorelei. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's like her sister, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they couldn't.
And isn't there an Enchantress?
S.H.I.E.L.D. scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Exactly. Yeah, we can't even get Enchantress. We're gonna get Enchantress.
There's also
sister.
An Enchantress in D.C. too, right?
Yeah,
that's super confusing.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of comic books, man, and eventually you run out of ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, DC has two plastic people. So,
fair point. So I guess it could be
I would think that it's Lady Loki because it sets up so many better opportunities to discuss. I mean, one of the things that Tom Hiddleston said in that interview was that the show is a little bit about identity.
Right.
And I think it sets up way more chances to talk about identity if it's her.
I think it's more interesting for sure. Yeah.
If it's Enchantress, you're just interesting another character and it becomes like, okay. So, I mean, it doesn't, it lessens it, I think.
I think it's more interesting. I agree. If it's Lady, it's a female version of Loki. And it also adds up that, again, it adds in the multiverse possibilities of, Like, right. Yeah. what is going on with all these different Lokis? Yeah.
And they seem to be going heavily in that direction, right. based on, you know, just the names of and what little we know of upcoming movies.
Right. I mean, and this, there's still tie-in stuff back to the Nexus that we heard mentioned in WandaVision too, right? So
yeah,
there's still some stuff building on top of that.
Yeah, there you go. It's a Loki from the multiverse who can't get back, and so they're going to blow up the timeline to collapse it so that they can get back to where they came from.
Possible.
Yeah, sure. But so the reason I brought that up, the Enchantress thing up, is that I completely agree with you, and I would be disappointed if it wasn't another version of Loki, because an alternative version of Loki is somebody that he can learn from.
Yeah.
The character can learn from, and you could grow. Enchantress being like, well, I tricked you, and we're going to use it, this magic, because it's cool. It's like, that's not good writing. Like, and these shows have been well, but I mean, even Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which, you know, we broadly really liked, had some issues, but, you know, broadly was pretty good. Wasn't doing silly tricks like, sticking Mephisto, or like just coming up with weird
one
random
of these
stuff
times,
in
it's
there.
Gonna be Mephisto, guys, one of these times.
Well, then fine, then I will be surprised. But, you know, so far these shows have taught us how to watch them, which is to watch them. Yeah. You can theorize about it a bit, but like, you're never gonna get, you know, it turned out Galactus was behind the whole thing.
Right,
the
it's not aiming to do that. That's not the story it's trying to tell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool.
All right, shall we do a rating?
We should.
We need to, but yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Guy?
Strong Biff. Two in a row. Very, very good. This is Biff on a jet ski. That's what this is. I love the
no
opening.
No reasonable man can disagree.
Right, yeah. I love the opening. I was like, because it pans down, and I'm like, that's a kind of weirdly refined looking Middle Ages thing, and then it says Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and I'm like, 1985. I'm like, oh, I get it. That's why.
And then the woman who says, some of us need this, you know.
yeah Oh, which, great. By the way, it's not Catherine Hahn, and it is not Agatha Harkness. Because it's, when I saw her from behind at first, I'm like, no, come on, don't do that. And then it wasn't. No, I mean, not that I don't want to see her, but it's,
yeah, you know,
we don't need to cameo and put like little things everywhere. That's a trap.
Right.
Which is a
strong Biff.
John?
Yeah, it's a Biff. I mean, I'm not sure. I enjoyed this episode so much, and slightly, and I guess in a slightly different way than the first one. It's still, but I laughed a fair amount on this one, I think. I mean, the whole thing with the salad, I thought was...
And the Boku. Just don't forget the Boku.
You know, it's like this super powerful agency, and they're in the cafeteria, and he's ruining his salad.
And it's a terrible, it's a terrible looking salad, too.
It's not very good, right? It's just like a tiny little, like very basic salad. So I don't know. It's very fun. At the same time, it seems to get into some fairly heady metaphysical topics that are super interesting. So. They're so far, they're doing great work.
Yeah. I'll round out the Biff votes. I think this, it's interesting, right? I mean, you know, we're only two episodes in, but it's comparing it to both the previous series in some ways. This is a lot more WandaVision than it is Falcon and Winter Soldier, obviously, in sort of theme and tone and all of that. I think I'm very curious to know how this will influence Marvel's decisions, like what series it's going to invest in as it keeps going, because, you know, we have a slate coming up of stuff that's very hero-centric, right? You know, we have Hawkeye, and we have Ms. Marvel, and we have Moon Knight, and all this stuff that's very focused on these titles, and it seems like the stuff that's weirder is doing a little bit stronger work. But I'm intrigued to see how they play that out.
I'm hesitant to judge Falcon and the Winter Soldier too harshly, just based on the conditions under which they had to make it.
I'm not judging it harshly. I'm just saying, I think what's, certain things have resonated in ways that I think they will, of course, look at. I mean, you know, Guy, I know you poo-pooed this a little bit when it came up, but like the fact that they already were like, oh, Loki did so well, we're going to move all our shows to Wednesdays. And it's like, you had one data point. And I agree. It's like a little wild to think this show did so much better that we will, after 1 week, decide we're going to move all our future shows to the same day. It's like, that seems like a bad, or at least a decision made on a very small amount of data. But they are confident in it, apparently.
Yeah. So my argument, just privately in the text to you guys, was like, well, they moved all of the kid shows too, which, you know, I think moving shows, you know, like this, or you know, the ones that we would cover, that, you know, quote unquote adults watch, to a Wednesday makes sense, because, you know, you can watch it on a Wednesday or a Thursday night, whereas a Friday or something else, you may be going out. Oh, God knows that's not been the case recently.
Well, maybe that was part of the calculus, but there, though, people will start going out again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and sure. The other thing is, it's like, it's quite possible that somebody was saying Wednesdays the whole time.
Yep, sure.
And then, you know, they're like, they got like, fine, okay, we're going to do these ones on Fridays, like everything else, and we'll try Loki, and if it works, fine, we'll do Wednesdays. And then they just won. They basically just won the corporate in bed of like, okay, well, that did gangbusters, so fine. Right, let's just try Wednesdays.
Yeah. Well, I think they
could release it at like 3 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and
it'll be fine.
It would probably still be super well.
Well, and this is what I'm saying, is I'm just interested in how, as they get more information and they see the reception of all these things, I always wonder how that influences decision making, and I always wonder how they're thinking about stuff in the long term. So, for example, also another thing that I found myself thinking about this week is, well, we have all these tacit concessions that the multiverse exists now, right? And we know that the next thing on the docket is What If with the Watcher. Yeah. And I'm like, well, it seems like you could even have some sort of tie-in there, right? If all of a sudden we've got all these multiverses we're aware of and we get to peek inside them when see all these different variations of characters that we know, perhaps there is a thematic overarching, you know, thing that they're doing even with that, which is fascinating to me. And I think really cool. So I'm curious. I'm curious where they're going. I'm really enjoying it so far. In some ways, this seems the most consistent. I don't know if that's the quite word, but like, you know, WandaVision bounced around a lot at the beginning, and purposefully it was doing that as a thing. And so going in and having these two episodes that start very strong and feel really like we made a 6-hour movie and we are slicing it up into chunks is, I think, it bodes well. So hopefully they can stick these next four. All right. Well, that's it. We are out of time for this week. But as always, I would like to thank my compatriots. John Maltz, thanks for being here.
Remember, shop Rock's Cart.
Guy English, always a pleasure.
I would give it anything to have a timeline reset bomb. I think I could have used that a few times in my life.
Peace out. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We hope you're enjoying the show. We'll be back next week to discuss both the next episode of Legends of Tomorrow and the next episode of Loki. We're on this riding this train for a little bit longer, but we appreciate you sticking with us. We appreciate all your support. Feel free to send in your...
And speaking of support...
Oh, yes. Thanks, John.
We are still selling t-shirts, and not only are we still selling
John cannot stop making t-shirts.
Continue to proliferate because I cannot stop making t-shirts. So now we have, God, how many do we have? 1, 2, 3, 6, 7 shirts. Yes, we have 7 shirts, a bunch of TVA shirts, and now there's a Miss Minutes shirt, and we have 2 Kablooey shirts that I think look really good. So
the t-shirts will continue until morale improves.
Exactly. Or until you buy like 9 million of them. If you go to cottonbureau.com, and now you can search on Biffcast as one word, and it will show you all the shirts that are available that support this show.
Please support the show. Thank you, everybody out there. I know we haven't had time for a letters page in a while, but if you've got your
I mean, we should mention Superman and Louis, which is, you know, a show I've been enjoying a lot.
Guy loves Superman and Louis.
Well, yeah, Superman, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
I can't believe I have the keys to our Biffcast account. That was a That was a foolhardy decision that we made as a group.
Louis is shocked to find there's kryptonite
here. Yeah, the OPSEC on our Twitter account is not going great. Yes, well, please do send in the letters, biff at theincomparable.com or at biffcast on Twitter. You know, we'll get around to them when we have some spare moments. And we genuinely like hearing your thoughts and theories about these shows.
Yeah.
So send them in. Yeah. We're reading. That's all we've got time for. We'll see you next week.